So we are beginning, it's in the middle of chapter 26 of Tanya, and it's on page 113-114 at the bottom of the English translation. And we're beginning in the Hebrew text, 5-6 lines down, Vehine Eitza Hayu Utsa. Now this passage of Tanya has told us, in a passage we studied last week, that being joyful is a very useful and positive aspect of our lives. Not just, you would say, because being happy. Is it nice being happy, Miriam? Because being happy feels better than, God forbid, feeling sad. But also being happy makes one alert and quick and able to deal with the ups and downs in one's internal battles that are very often taking place for many people. So therefore, and he describes it in the passage we learned last week, like a wrestling match, and the person who's quicker is able to, even if he gets thrown to the ground, he can bounce up in a second and immediately get on with the battle, and he's not fazed by the fact that he was thrown down. So a person might err, we might make a mistake, we might tumble down for a few moments, and then we bounce up again. But if we are depressed and gloomy, it's just more likely that once we're thrown down to the ground, spiritually speaking, we start going into a very gloomy mode, and we say, I'm never going to be any good, and that's just like me, you see, I'm never going to be able to improve, I can't deal with these temptations. We just lie on the ground, you see, we don't get up. And that means the next little temptation that comes along, we say, well, what's the point of trying to resist it? Might as well give in. But if we are joyful and positive and alert and happy, we're able to, boom, we're up again. Well, listen, a person is not a portrait. There's a saying, a chosid is nishkein portret. A person is not a portrait. A portrait is always the same, so it never makes any mistakes. But a person occasionally falls down and also has the power to climb up. And sometimes it's because we get knocked down that we make the decision we're going to climb up and up and up, and we climb up a few more steps up the spiritual ladder. Now, how can a person possibly be joyful and happy if, God forbid, they have problems? Now, problems are a part of life. And let's see what advice he gives over here. Vehine Eitza Hayu Utsa. Now the advice which is given, L'tahel Liboy, to purify one's heart, Mikol Eitzev, of any sorrow, V'nidnuk Daiga, any little bit of worry, Mimile Da'alma, of worldly matters. It's interesting how he puts it. It's as if our heart was assailed by worries and little depressions and feeling miserable, or big depressions, big, you know, feeling seriously miserable because we may have something seriously wrong, and the question is how to deal with that. And here he's talking about worldly issues. There's another type of issue, which is a spiritual issue. A person might be depressed because they did a transgression, which is a different kind of problem. And he deals with that in at a later page. But at the moment, he's talking about worldly issues. Now, worldly issues means, va'afilu, even he says, boni chai imazoini, children, life, which means health, and food. I mean, it might be life, not because of simply health. It might be a person's life's in danger for a different reason. So it's children, life, and health. So a person always worries about children, always has the opportunity to worry about children. That's part of life, and we can get very miserable about that. Or we can worry about life in literal terms, God forbid, if people's lives are in danger, or if it's illness, God forbid, and food. People don't have enough food to eat, or they don't have a roof over their head. So that is, these are all very legitimate worries, and the person is worrying about it. So how are we going to clear the worry out of our heart? If a person has problems, how can we get them to feel pure? He used that word, as if we don't have problems. So there are practical problems in a person's life. How are we able to escape from those practical problems? Okay, you hear the issue. Now, Mudah Zois L'Koil, everyone knows, says Rabbi Shneur Zalman, Maimar Azal, the saying of the sages, which the sages say in the Talmud, Kashem Shemavorech Al HaTova, just as a person makes a blessing when something good happens, there's actually a blessing when something good happens. We say, blessed are you, Baruch HaTorah, Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, HaToiv V'HaMeitiv, who is good and who does good. So we got a blessing for something good. So just as a person makes a blessing when something good happens, Chuli, etc. Now what he means by this etc. is the way the Gemara goes on and says, so we make a blessing. If God forbid something bad happens, we also have a blessing to say. And God forbid a person is in some terrible tragedy, whatever it is, there is a blessing to be made. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Dayan HaEmes, the true judge. And that idea that even when a person, I mean, this is a blessing, it's sometimes said at when, God forbid, there's a personal loss, someone has passed away, so the immediate mourners, they make this blessing. Or it might be other situations of grief. So there is this idea of blessing God even when there is something very negative that has happened. Now, the Gemara explains, explains in the Gemara, the kibuli basimcha, that what this means is to accept with joy. That's what it means. It's not just a matter of making a blessing, saying a few words with our lips. It's to accept this negative event with joyfulness. K'moy simchas ha-toyva ha-niglis v'niris, like the joy in something which is revealed good, visible good. So when something visibly good happens, a person is happy. They're happy in the heart. Something good has happened. It's a good thing. Everyone, you know, sometimes people dance for joy. They jump for joy. There are all kinds of different ways people have to... Well, we can get so joyful we start crying as well. Yes, okay. But, so what it's saying here is that even with this bad thing, which seems to be and normally would be called a bad thing that's happened, the person should feel joy. How can we possibly feel joy when something bad has happened? Ki gam zu l'toivo, because this too is for good. Everything that happens is ultimately for good. Everything that happens is for good. Rak she'eina niglis v'nireis le'eini basar. The only problem is, it's not visible to our human eyes.
Well, if everything happens for good, then there's no law.
That's an interesting point. You mean in terms of... Go on, explain, Michelle. Yeah.
You can justify anything.
So you mean if a person does something bad, you could justify it?
All right, there's a lesson to learn, there's an experience.
Yeah, well, here, well, you see, it's very interesting here.
Because we just there read
are
the
two,
whole...
There are two points in our perspective on the world. There's what we're doing and what's happening to us. Now, what we're doing, we're in control of, to a large extent. So we have the control to say that what we have to do are things that are right according to the Torah, and that generally means that what we're doing are obviously good things, right? Now, if someone else is doing something bad, if we're in control of the situation, So let's say we're a judge and there's a legal system and there's police and we can arrest that person and we can deal with that person in an appropriate way, whatever that might be, in order to prevent them doing something very wrong. So then we are able to do that, and that's what we're supposed to do. We don't just say, oh, well, really, there's a... he means good, you know, the fact that he serially killed those seven people, you know, it's just, he didn't think they were real people, you know, or something like that. No, we have to take, we just have to take action. And we have to, you know, maybe put him in prison or whatever has to be done.
To protect.
To protect everyone else or, you know, try to reform him in some way. But if the thing that has happened is something that we don't have a control over, you know, if a stone fell off a roof and hit someone on the head, you know, so now what are we going to do?
We had that. We just covered that. We had a stone fall.
Oh, right. Yeah. What, in the cedra? Right.
It's my team.
Okay, now, if it's my fault that I left the stone on the roof and the wind came and blew the stone off and so it fell on someone, so then I have to pay for it, and there's a whole legal system to see that I do. But if it's something where you can't actually, you know, there's this book called Jewish Haiku. So the haiku are little Japanese poems, 17 syllables long. I'm not sure if these little poems are 17 syllables long, but they're all little poems, if poem is the right word. So one of them is, lying in the road, wondering who to sue. Is it the car? Is it the, you know? So that's so you see, if there is some way that one can respond to the situation to sort of turn it in practical terms from bad into good, you know, if we can prevent the situation, if someone's fallen in the river, you don't just say, oh, well, you know, everything God does is good. You know, if you can swim, you jolly well jump into the river and try and save them. But if, God forbid, something has happened that we can't actually do anything about, and there we are, and we are, in a sense, a victim or of this situation, and the person is suffering. Maybe he's trying to do something about it.
Wait a second.
Yes.
Sorry, everybody. If the person's falling in the water and you walk past and, you know, you're able to save them, then you can say, you could realise that was an amazing golden opportunity for you to have the opportunity of saving someone.
Right.
So that makes sense. But how is it good for that person? What's the good? What was the merit? What was the gamze lotova for the person that fell in the water?
Well, that might be something for them to work out.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But let's just little brainstorm. Like, what could be a possible, you know,
possible scenario?
Yeah, or kind of justification. I don't know. That, like, maybe there was somebody that felt very in control of themselves and everything, and then they were suddenly, like, at the mercy. You know, they needed somebody else could help them, and then they realised they had a different relationship to their fellow human being.
All right. Okay. That's a possibility.
What's another one? I can kind of see that there'll be merit in everything. Mm-hmm. Some things are like really, really tested. Really. Like, you know, Pastor Solomon, that something terrible should happen to a parent, you know, in a car accident or a child. You know, things you just yes, and you think, well, what every single thing is supposed to be. We're talking about all people here. We're not just talking about Yidden.
You're right. It's interesting.
I mean, that was a question, actually.
It's an interesting thing that in earlier times, like the time of the Ramban, when they were discussing divine providence, that means the divine control of the details of existence, there's a word called Hashgacha Pratis, which is normally translated into English divine providence. But what it means in detail, what it means literally, is detailed supervision. God supervises the world in a detailed way. But there was a view a few hundred years ago among great rabbis that God really supervises the world in a general way. And it's just a general way, the things that happen, and only in the case of a tzaddik, of a very righteous person, is it absolutely in detail why this or that happened to them. But then came the Hasidic movement. So there was an argument among philosophers. Some said general...
a sort of hierarchy. That Hashem was only there really in detail for...
Well, that means that the leaves falling from the tree, well, they're just falling from the tree, you know, but if you have a human being or you have a tzaddik...
Yeah, the higher you are, the closer you are to Hashem.
That's right. And the more it's going to make a difference what happens in detail. Mm-hmm. But then that was the argument in the sort of 14th, 15th century. Then came the Baal Shem Tov.
Mm.
The Baal Shem Tov said, God's divine supervision of the world extends to every single thing in the world, every human being, every animal, every leaf.
Pebble.
That's right. And the way it's expressed in Chabad teachings is like this. You imagine a blade of, you know, like a long corn, a long ear of wheat, and it's blowing in the wind. Right, you're in this field and there's this long blade of grass or ear of corn and it's blowing in the wind. And he says now, this blowing of the blade of grass or ear of wheat in the wind, not only is it supervised by Hashem exactly that it should be blowing this way at this moment and that way at the other moment, but the fact that it's blowing in this or that way has an effect on the entire purpose of creation.
Huh.
And if that's the case for a blade of grass or something like that, how much more so for a human being, any human being? And if that's the case for any human being, how much more so for a Jew who was given the Torah and has a special responsibility in relation to God and the world? So therefore, it in fact implies to every human being that every single detail that happens ultimately is positive, except that we don't see it. And that's what he's going to explore here. Ki gam zu l'toivah, this too is for good, rak she'ena nigles v'niris l'ene bosa, except it's not visible to our human eyes. Ki hima alma d'iskasyo, because it's a level of revelation which comes from the hidden world.
There's another way that somebody said years ago when I was doing some studies, and he said there's no such thing as an accident or coincidence. Everything is perfect but imperfectly understood by man. That's
nice.
Yeah,
that's the same, isn't it?
It is saying the same. It is things. The only thing is that there are certain things that we can see that we have to do something about. See, that's the thing. The person's fallen in the river, so we have to dive in and save them. The person is hungry, we have to try and get some money together, organize them in a job, or give them charity, or something.
Today a man asked me just as I was crossing the main junction there. You know, it's like you're trying. And this man came up to me, not Jewish, as far as I could tell. You know, you can never tell, can you?
Mm-hmm.
So, but no kind of, you know, signifiers. And he was a black gentleman as well, actually. Yeah. And anyway, he said, "Oh, I need some money. I'm so hungry. Could you give me some money for a meal? Just a pound." And I said, "A pound's not going to get you very much."
Made you stay.
I didn't give him more than a pound. What I said to him, because I just thought it's crazy. If he's homeless and he's hungry, then he must know of like a place where he can get a free meal. There's places that give meals. They feed people, and I felt kind of very.
Wary.
No, I just felt very sort of challenged by it. I just really didn't know what to do. I wanted to do the most helpful things. I just sort of
given him a sandwich, that would have been helpful.
I didn't know.
Perhaps he went for drugs.
But that's why.
What's he going to do now? I just thought, I just don't feel good.
Well, you're still down the mitts for now.
Well, I gave him advice. I said, and he seemed to take it. You know that he should find some other way he can get fed properly, and that's what I gave him. But I felt a bit like wasn't really exactly giving him.
You gave him advice instead of a pound.
Yeah, because I didn't think.
Karen, that might have been the right thing to do at that point.
He seemed to be very.
A lot of people would support the view that giving him advice. Treating him like a human being and respecting him, giving him advice, might be the best thing.
I just said, oh, you know, Ben's going to get you around. And then I suddenly thought, oh, maybe he wants to have something else, and I don't really want to fund that. And he needs to think about, you know, he's going to need a meal every day, and, you know, and he's homeless. And I said, there must be an organisation, but I wish I could have thought of one. Mm. I mean, I can think of, like, lots of Jewish organisations.
Salvation Army.
Salvation Army.
That was soup kitchen, no?
Next.
Where
it was
is
started
it?
By a Jew, actually. My husband always said.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. That's why Edison wrote, I forgot his name, Lord Booth or something.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
He was Jewish.
Okay. Now.
Okay, do you happen to know where it is? Just in case, like,
no.
I get. Because then I can be practical and say, you know.
There isn't a branch in Tottenham behind the Seven Sisters Station.
Go to your local church, perhaps there or something.
Kitchen
or something. Okay. Inga to the
rest. No, you're supposed to give him something, not necessarily a lot.
He might be Jewish. It wouldn't be very good to send him off to church, would it?
Yes, that's a Cora once. I saw him give some money to a guy outside the Summerfield. He said, I don't know, he gave him a pound or something. So I said, you know, how come? Perhaps he used for drugs. Says this guy is actually Jewish. Invite him for Pesach or something, at least. But he gave him money. You know, he was. You know, he can't tell this. Okay.
Anyway. All right. Now, you see, there are things where we can actually discern the pattern of events. There was a terribly tragic event. I mean, this is not going anywhere to explain this tragic event, but we're just talking about it on the individual level. There was a Pan Am plane which came from Frankfurt to London and was supposed to go to New York. And unfortunately, a bomb was put in the plane in Frankfurt and it blew up over Lockerbie, which was a Scottish town. Mm-hmm. And the plane crashed and everyone in the plane was killed, and quite a few people in Lockerbie were also killed, 15 people, I think. And it was a terrible tragedy. However, there were people who had tried. This was a kind of story that was going around Stamford Hill. Some people call them urban myths. But they may well
story,
have, well, some urban myths are
I
true.
No, I think Martin knows who it happened, who they were, these people.
So do you want to tell the story? Go on.
No,
go on,
I'm
tell
not
the story. If your husband knows.
I think they were rushing the driver to get to the airport.
They were in
the
cab.
There was a whole group of Yidden that were going in there. They were in a cab or minibus, whatever, and they missed the flight and they were going crazy, you know, because, you know, it took too long and they missed that plane.
Right. I heard they went to the wrong terminal, you know, which
could
was something that the driver
exactly
would normally do. And
but the funny thing, the other day, did you hear what the chief rabbi gave a talk? He was trying, this like a Muslim, a Jew, and somebody else trying to convince this report from the BBC or whatever, who's didn't believe in God, you know, to he wanted people to convince him, that, you know, to believe in God. And chief rabbi said, he said something, what happened with Lockerbie? The plane fell down, some houses got hit, some did not. Was that, you know, like just happened that way? And chief rabbi seemed to agree with it. Couldn't believe it, you know. He should be speaking up for Hashgacha Pratis, no? And he didn't. He said, well, yeah, it was just, you know, the way it happened, kind of thing. I was on the BBC the other day. I have it on tape even.
And what would you have said?
But every grass that moves, every blade that falls, you know, if it happened to fall on that house for some reason, you know, we don't necessarily know why, but it's all, you know, 100%, you know, worked out.
Well, so look, let's just, at this stage, we can look at it, there's two aspects. One is things that you can actually work out why it's good. Like for those individuals who missed the plane, as far as they are concerned, I'm not talking about the people on the plane or the people in the houses in Lockerbie, I'm talking about the people who missed the plane. They could say, you know what, the fact that our cab didn't get to the plane on time, which seemed a very strange and upsetting thing at that moment, in fact, that saved our lives. So for us, it was upsetting, but in reality, when you look at it with a wider view and you saw what happens, what would have been if they had been on time for that plane, it in fact, although it was upsetting then, it was really good for them. And then you have situations where we haven't yet been able to work out, or we can't even imagine working out why that should be good. Why should it ever be good that a Nazi kicks a woman to death in a concentration camp for whatever reason? You know, that kind of thing which took place. How can that in any way be seen as good? Okay, so what it's going to say in Tanya, which hopefully we'll be looking at next week, I hope, is that the things that are hidden actually come from a higher dimension of revelation of God. And so it goes beyond understanding. It's not just a matter of us working out, well, it's good because of this or that. We may not be able to work out why it was good. But what we do know is that those things which are revealed good come from a revealed aspect of God, and those things which are hidden come from a hidden aspect of God.
And the hidden aspect of God is higher.
Is higher, yes. And so that means that the person who's surrounded by different problems and issues and pain of this kind and the other kind and tragedy is in a mysterious way, according to this teaching, is closer to God than the person who is just, you know, everything is running in the normal way. So there's these two modes of existing, one where things are okay, good, you know, well, that's wonderful, let's do our task in the right way. And then there is a more heroic mode, as it were, where things are much more difficult. But in that situation of difficulty, the person is actually closer to Hashem. So that's as far as we're able to get today, and with the help of Hashem next week, we'll go a bit further.
I remember that saying, I missed a bit out. It says there's no such thing as an accident or coincidence. There's only natural law and the laws of nature, which are perfect but imperfectly.
Well, that's the bit where we wouldn't say that. You see, there's only God. Now, God acts through laws of nature, but sometimes he suspends them as well. So that makes it into a different kind of statement. Okay. See, nature is just nature running on, but Hashem is responding to you and me all the time.
Hi, Rich.